first soft open on season two.
Season two, Jacob.
Box Office Bylines, a podcast about movies, about journalism, from Ace in the Hole to Zodiac and Almost Famous to Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. Welcome back to season two, Tara Thorne.
And welcome back to you, Jacob Boone, up there in Yellowknife. How's it going?
It's nice. It's like 4 degrees today, 5, 6 degrees.
Okay.
So spring is here. Lakes are melting. Love it.
We're both in COVID agnostic areas. You especially.
Yes. We're doing okay.
Yeah. The whole country's kind of freaking out today as we speak, but we're both pretty good.
So that's good. You're healthy. You're safe.
I'm hungover, but okay. That's not the virus's fault.
And we have with us a special guest also in the north of the north, by the north.
Norm of the north.
Writer for hire, whose work has been featured in Outside, Wired, Pacific Standard, Bloomberg Businessweek, Grantland, The Walrus, Canadian Geographic, Hazlitt. Her first book, Nerve, A Personal Journey Through the Science of Fear, is a national bestseller that is out now in paperback in Canada. Eva Holland, welcome.
Hello.
Hi, Eva. We were just, before we got here, we were trying to figure out if we've met before, and it's not official, but we're pretty sure.
We're pretty sure I served you lunch at some point on Gottage Street. Yeah.
And you are coming to us from outside Whitehorse?
Yeah, right now I'm in a little town called Atlin, BC, that's pretty much right on the Yukon, BC border. And I can almost see Alaska from my house.
Just like Sarah Palin. She lives in Alaska. She can see Russia. And what are you doing there?
She can see Alaska from her house.
One hopes. I am in Atlin for the winter. It's kind of my pandemic retreat. I'm normally based in Whitehorse. I'm headed back there later this spring, but took an opportunity to rent a little cabin by the lake for the winter and just double down on isolation.
Nice.
And you chose this week's movie.
I did.
State of Play. It was between this and How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
I will say State of Play is the movie that's been mentioned to me the most as a film we should do.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
It's a modern classic of the journalism thriller genre.
Mm-hmm. I have many thoughts.
Why don't we get some basic info out of the way? For anyone who doesn't know, 2009 film. Muckraking journalist Russell Crowe probes the suspicious death of his old college roommate slash now congressman Ben Affleck's mistress while barely tolerating the help of an online journalist in quotes, I guess, as this movie seems to treat her, played by Rachel McAdams. And together they uncover a conspiracy of corporate greed, dangerous assassins, and delve into the soulless world of corporate PR, played by Jason Bateman.
And don't forget, Sir Helen Mirren.
Yeah.
As the editor-in-chief.
Jeff Daniels also in this, and Robin Wright.
Robin Wright in the thankless wife part.
Directed by Kevin MacDonald.
Terrific director. Last King of Scotland.
Yeah, and just recently made Whitney.
And also The Mauritanian, which is what Jodie Foster won the Golden Globe for.
Written by several people, which is never a great sign, including Tony Gilroy of the Bourne films and Billy Ray, who wrote Shattered Glass and Richard Jewell. And it is kind of feels like an amalgam maybe of those. Based on a BBC series as well, State of Play by Paul Abbott, which I hadn't seen. I don't know if, Eva, had you seen the original BBC series?
I had not, no. I have seen this iteration several times, though.
So why this film? What did you want to talk about with this one?
Well, I've been kind of an avid follower of the journo rom-com, but I also enjoy a good journo thriller. And just looking through the ones you had already done, this was the standout to me of the ones that you guys haven't already tackled. I like the sort of like, you know, there was much, much discussion about how much work went into making Spotlight realistic in terms of sort of journalism fashion and stuff. And I feel like this is like realism turned up to 13. Like, it's just like a bit too much, you know. Russell Crowe's like texting in traffic while pouring cheesies on his face, and his desk is a fire hazard. And it's all like, it's all true enough to life, but like just turned up a few notches to make it that much more, I don't know, comical or something.
And they think that haircut is like what a regular person looks like. And there's the one guy that just always wears a baseball cap.
Yeah.
And then there's the fat guy. Mm-hmm. And then there's Rachel McAdams.
The blogger.
Who looks, and she looks a lot better than she does in Spotlight.
Yes. Yeah. She's the hot blogger.
As was the style of the time.
I like that description that it's sort of journalism reality turned up to 13. It reminded me of Riverdale.
Oh.
In that.
not a great sign either.
Like, it was unclear to me what time period we were in because it's trying to be this throwback to the 70s political journalism thriller, but it's also 2009. I wouldn't have thought the internet was a new thing, but right. Like it's like Crowe seems to be more at home with typewriters, and even McAdams is dressed in not what I would say 2009 period appropriate outfits. It's this heightened weird reality. I hope they were going for that.
I do think that the part with the grizzled reporter who like doesn't know how to internet is not inaccurate for 2009.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Because that's how they end up together, working together, is that he needs her to do Google stuff.
Actual journalism.
Yeah.
When he calls her in the middle of the real night
things. Yeah.
With a tip.
And she says, oh, you want me to do this now? And he's like, well, obviously. And then she turns her light off. And I'm like, she's not done. And she turns the light back on to call the person.
Real journalists get up in the middle of the night.
That's right. And he's always giving her shit about never having a pen.
And then gives her at the end a necklace made out of pens.
Yeah. With a bit of an appropriative title. He calls her like something very uncool.
What did he call her?
He called her like, it was some sort of like African throw.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was like her Nefertiti necklace or something.
But I would like to talk about, before we get to the journalism, I would like to talk about, this movie opens with Russell Crowe singing along to Patty Murphy.
Yes.
Yeah. The night Pat Murphy died?
As recorded by his good friend, Newfoundland's own Alan Doyle.
Great Big C.
Yeah. So do we know they're friends? Like, Doyle produced Russell Crowe's awful album.
What?
How did they become friends?
I do not know, but I know Alan Doyle was in Robin Hood or whatever, like, whatever folklore film Russell Crowe made. And his name was Alan A. Dale.
Did Russell Crowe ever film anything East Coast?
Where did they film Master and Commander?
I don't think that was Halifax.
No.
They met somewhere along the way they met, because the first I recall was people would talk about how he would just show up to pubs in Newfoundland to like jam with them.
Russell Crowe would?
Yeah.
There's no way Alan Doyle has written about this in one of his many books. Hold on.
Okay.
I have a random Halifax side note related to the song, which is that I hadn't heard that song in years, and I just last week unearthed some of those free Alexander Keith CDs that used to come in 2/4s. And I put one on in the car, and there was the night that Patty Murphy died.
Huh.
And then days later, the song reappeared in the movie. It was like some kind of fate.
A good song.
Okay, so Russell Crowe was friends with Alan Hocko, who's an actor, so that makes sense. Yeah. And Alan Hocko made a show called Republic of Doyle, which Russell Crowe guested on, and that's how he got in the Newfoundland Mafia. And apparently there's a Crowe Doyle songbook they just released digitally.
Wow.
So in 2011, they were up to volume 3.
This goes deep.
I remember there was like a CBC, like, or I don't know, not W5, but just some story of Alan Doyle, like his life in small town Newfoundland. And they got the interview with Russell Crowe in Hollywood talking about his friend. So they are good buddies who are all like, he's helping him out whenever. Pick up the phone and I'm there, Alan.
It's so weird. Oh my goodness. You know what? I will say I've read Alan Doyle's first memoir, and it's he should, like, against all odds, he literally grew up with a dirt floor in an outhouse. That guy should not have been able to be famous. But he's from some podunk town in Newfoundland. And look at him now. Oh, wait. Sorry, I'm just reading at AmericanSongwriter.com. He met Russell when they were both presenters at the NHL Hockey Awards.
Wow.
And a bro friendship was born.
And he had heard of Great Big Sea when he was filming Mystery Alaska. This is Russell. And then he invited him to hang out while he was filming Cinderella Man. And the rest is very meandering history here on this podcast of ours. Okay.
I think it's nice that he got his friend. I mean, he's been doing lots of stuff. But yeah, you got your friend's song in the
movie.
And
he also has like a tribute haircut, I thought.
Oh, my God, yeah.
It's exactly the same.
Who had nicer hair, him or Rachel McAdams?
Oh, boy. Her hair wasn't that great.
Mm.
I think Robin... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I don't.
I was going to say, I think Robin Wright took the hair Olympics in this movie.
Mm.
Yeah, she always looks
luscious.
Good. She always looks amazing.
Affleck either cosmetically grayed his temples or let that hair dye run out to make himself look a little older.
I thought Ben Affleck was terrible in this movie. Can I just say that?
Sure. I don't think he would mind.
I wouldn't care. I thought he overacted and cried. I don't know. I didn't believe him for a second. And then I guess in the end you find out that he's more evil than we thought he was. But but to me it's like, when you've got Russell Crowe and Ben Affleck, there's no one to root for. Like, I'm rooting for the military assassin.
You're not rooting for the truth?
No, there was no... This is the problem with this movie, in terms of, like, journalism framework. He's helping his friend the whole time. He should not be on the story. Like, full stop. And Helen Mirren says that at some point. He calls him a geezer to his face, which is amazing. But Rachel McAdams says it too. What's her name? Della? She also says,
Della Fry.
She's like, you're showing your friend this video. You're giving it everything to him. And then he's like, he didn't have a threesome with that trashy waitress. He would do, that's not real. It's like, it's all bad. He's a bad reporter. Bad, bad, bad.
It's wild that his byline still goes on it in the end after it's come out that he's like sleeping with the subject's wife and like...
Also wild that Kevin MacDonald, who, again, great director, thought a stunning final shot would be the dialogue box with the file name. That's like congressman-arrested.doc or whatever.
Export file.
but I love the closing title sequence, though.
I knew Jacob would love that. The printing press.
It's basically journal porn.
Yeah.
What did you think of... I want to talk about the ethics more, but I found it gave me pause when he wrote the final story and then just added her name to it by surprise when she didn't seem to have, like... I mean, she was there with the reporting, but she didn't write those words. And if it was me, I would have felt like, well, I want to at least contribute to how this is written.
Well, they had earlier divided up the subject matter for the story, right? So I think they had written an earlier draft before, you know, the final sequence of gunshots and whatnot. and so maybe there was like pieces of her copy from that earlier writing session in there. I don't know. I've never worked collaboratively like that, the way is depicted in this movie and like Spotlight, for instance. So I don't really know how that works.
I also couldn't tell if... He was like, okay, you write, like, if they were writing a package. Like, I couldn't tell if it was were, one story or if it was like, here, you take the murder and the trashy lady, and I'll take the government.
The montage at the end, the paper that comes out has several stories.
Several stories, okay.
Because, I mean, there's you know, the mistress was a plant story. The, you know, PR exec spills all. The and then the, like, congressman implicated in the murder. They broke it down into several.
Right, okay. That makes sense. I wasn't.
One thing I do think that sucks is, like, and again, I was entertained by, like, I found the movie very enjoyable. I just think it's a journalism movie. It's not good. But,
journalism is not good.
No, not at all. But one of the things that I thought was weird and kind of sucky is that we meet the mistress when she's being murdered. So it's like they can spin it any way they want. They can be like, she was a spy. And it's like, but why? Why did she need to be a spy? I don't know. I just felt like there was enough there to get her killed without her being a spy she then fell in love with.
Who was secretly pregnant as well.
And also pregnant. And we don't see her ever. We see her in a tiny little video and on like a photo. Mm-hmm. It's just sort of like, it's like that could have been a good part for some lady. But instead, no.
Is Maria Thayer?
Yeah, I know.
Strangers with Candy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Good for her.
Jessica Chastain, I believe, auditioned for that role.
That's the Chastain-y role for sure.
Yeah.
It was real. if there were, you know, lines and stuff.
Did you guys catch...
Sorry. Go ahead, Eva.
I was going to say, just, did you catch young Viola Davis as the coroner? Pre-fame Viola Davis?
Yeah, I heard that she was in it, and then I didn't remember seeing her, and then I put it together.
I couldn't.
And it's one line.
I couldn't catch it, but the voice tugged at me, and then I saw the credits, and I was like, that's why.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I loved all those man of the people moments, where he, like, knows he's buddies with the coroner, or he goes to get his chili dog, and they're, like, the regular Joe.
Yeah.
And then when she goes to the courthouse and he's like, how do you know Cal? I'll walk you. And I'm like, they're setting her up. And it's like, no, mm-hmm. they're not. They love him.
No, yeah. He's just an everyday kind of schlub.
All the cops love him. The people love him.
Yeah.
An everyday kind of schlub who can outrun an assassin once.
Oh my God, yeah.
And then also dive out of the way of being shot by said assassin very close.
Mm-hmm.
At close range.
I could have watched another 20 minutes
of him in the parking
Crow,
rush.
Like, stealthily sneaking around the cars. Just making a lot of odd faces. And it was tense. I enjoyed it.
It was tense.
And I had no idea what was going to happen. I did not predict he was just going to jump on this
the
family's
car.
Van.
Oh.
Yeah, it was good. Speaking of ethics, you promise a source anonymity, and then you secretly record them spilling their guts on video as well as audio. And I wasn't really sure why they needed to do that, why they couldn't have just had a tape recorder at the interview. Because they have, like, a whole FBI setup in the other room. I don't know any newspaper that would have all that gear.
That was amazing. The whole ethic of you know, blackmailing somebody whose life is at risk into going on the record. it's something for sure.
But he
I
wasn't
mean,
even like.
But he was an abhorrent person, so we like think it's funny.
But they were still gonna not name him, weren't they? They just didn't want him to go back on it.
They didn't want him to
later.
Recant. Yeah.
But if they hadn't been two hotel rooms.
Yeah. If they hadn't had the FBI set up, we couldn't have watched Jason Bateman like
exactly.
thrashing.
And that's what it was for, yeah.
Yeah, that's what it was for. It did look cool, I'll give them that.
I just imagine as a reporter trying to set up hidden cameras in a hotel room. Like, we barely got this Zoom to work. There's no way we'd be able to pull all that off.
Yeah.
No.
And
Jason Bateman
Yeah, go ahead.
He showed up in like a Cadillac commercial, hair slicked back, just as like scum of the earth personified PR person, and that was fun.
Yeah, he was great. I have trouble unseeing, you know, Arrested Development in Jason Bateman always, but it was fun to see him do something different.
Yeah, he clearly was having a good time for sure.
Just thinking about the FBI setup, I mean, on the one hand, the Washington Globe is clearly meant to be, you know, the Post, I guess. But and so maybe they have the money for the FBI setup. But at the same time, like going back to the, you know, what we talked about at the beginning with sort of the journo aesthetic they went for, like that newsroom, it looks like your feet would stick to the floor. Like it's it's more like community newspaper hovel than, you know, shiny metropolitan broadsheet.
The newsroom looked like MI6's headquarters in Skyfall. Just like high tech in concrete. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. I mean, I would have loved to have worked there. Yeah, it was a pretty cool space. And all set, not real. So.
Wow. I actually didn't even realize that Rachel McAdams worked there for a while. I thought he was just giving a random tip to some lady.
Did you miss when she came out of the internet section?
I must have. Also, there was a there was an area for copy editors, plural.
Yeah.
That was nice.
That's how you know
that's
made this before the crash.
When did they have time to write? Because it seemed like they were already pushing the deadline for this feature, like when they were in the motel room, and then there's several more scenes of them driving back and forth across Washington, getting other new interviews. Like, it felt like the final story was being written at, like, 8 a.m.
Well, I never knew what day it was.
Mm.
Like, I didn't know how much time was actually passing.
It was hard to tell. I felt bad for all the people who were just sitting around waiting for him to finish his story.
Yeah.
That scene when they're all just literally watching him type.
Yeah.
We've all been there, though. I was like, yeah, that's always fun to have people watch you.
And then he just slings his bag over his shoulder and he's like, all right, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
See ya.
Also, can we talk about how he had had several drinks? Like, they were ripping through that bottle of rum or whatever it was. And then he's like, oh my God, Robin writes in on it. And he gets up and runs away. It's like, should you not be loaded? And then he still dove out of the assassin's way. That was the same day, right?
That felt like a studio rewrite as well, that like he was supposed to originally die.
Yes.
And she would finish the story. But we can't have him die. Because, yeah, it was such a tense moment building up to this thing. And the guy just, the sniper with his machine gun misses at point blank range.
At point blank. And I also don't believe he would have made any speech. It would have been like, you're dead.
Yeah.
Like, it wouldn't have been like, I need you to know why I'm doing this. It's like, dude, we know.
The military assassin guy's backstory of like, I just love my country too much to see the military be corporatized was like not entirely convincing for the killing spree that he went on for me. But I get that they tell us once that he's troubled. So.
Uh-huh.
Well, you can tell by his dead-eyed blank face. He has seen some shit.
Yeah, there's the whole like subplot of the privatization of military forces that runs that's what Affleck's trying to stop so that the army can maintain, and this guy's like, yeah, I want the army to be
good,
killing, murdering people
themselves,
not for corporations, yeah, for their country.
Yeah, that's the funny thing about Affleck, is that he's supposed to be this like politically clean person,
mm-hmm.
but he's upset that all of his own personal actions are what he's going to be remembered for, even though it's literally all his own fault.
Yeah. Do you buy when he, I mean, he explains it that he didn't order the psychopath to kill his mistress.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I buy it. But I think that he needed to intervene a lot sooner once the killing spree began.
Yeah. Tell your friend to stop it.
One of those guys was delivering a pizza. That's a line.
And he was like only doing it because he had bought a franchise as a small business owner. He wanted to learn the run.
I like how
that weird bit of backstory we learned.
Well, that made his death more tragic because he wasn't a minion, Jacob. He was an upstanding family man with business. Yeah. It matters more
also,
when he dies.
I feel like Robin Wright If she's supposed to, we're supposed to think of her as a bad person, I don't. She got good wifed and she deserved to do whatever she wanted.
Okay, so was she in on it? Because her mentioning
the
a
money.
Key detail is how he figures it, how Crow figures it out.
I think so, but we never see him confront her about it.
I don't.
So yeah. I think that's it. Just like they dropped the thread and then didn't tie it up.
I don't think she was in on it. I think she got the number from Ben Affleck, but Ben Affleck shouldn't have known the number. And
that's what I assumed they were trying to show. Yeah.
Oh, maybe. Either way, I support whatever she did, even if it was murder.
Do you support her having an affair with Russell Crowe?
No. And also, I am also sure that Rachel McAdams was supposed to as well. And I'm glad we didn't have time for that.
Yeah, I was glad that
she looked at him like, you know, a few times, like lasciviously, and I did not care for it.
Yeah, I was glad they kept that to like flirty collegial.
Mm-hmm.
I liked his like half-hearted attempts at mentorship, like when he was like, talk louder now, yell at Helen Mirren.
Yeah.
It sounds like we liked the movie for the most part.
It was very entertaining.
Yeah.
I love this movie. I just don't think it's like a demonstration of good journalistic practices.
No, definitely not.
I did enjoy that they made time for a research montage.
They
one
did.
Of my favorite staples of a journalism mm-hmm. movie, including Rachel McAdams going knocking on doors like she does in Spotlight.
Yeah.
Like giving them a shut in her face.
Yeah. The door knocking, the phone calls.
There's even a great, like, a dog shuts the door in her face.
How was Rachel McAdams not in Run This Town? I guess they
She's
cut the lady reporters
that?
Out of it. But, like, I just feel like that was a missed opportunity to have Toronto native Rachel McAdams in a
I'm sure
Toronto.
That was on the dream cast list.
Yeah.
But you and I watched that movie, Tara.
Yeah, we did.
The Rob Ford.
I have not seen this one.
Satire?
It's not
a satire. It's not.
I don't know what it is.
Oh, it's the one with. I remember hearing about Robin Doolittle's reaction to it, I think. Yeah, where they like.
Yeah,
it's the Robin Doolittle movie with no Robin Doolittle.
Yeah. Right, where like the main character is a male reporter.
Yeah.
Who's like 25.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did hear about this.
It's available on Crave, I think, right now. People want to go watch it.
If they make another Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles remake at some point, perhaps Rachel McAdams should play April O'Neil and just, you know, really go all in on the lady reporter thing.
There you go.
When we were watching this, Katie asked me, why does Rachel McAdams appear in all these journalism movies? And I think there's maybe a couple explanations, but one, like maybe she really likes journalism. That'd be cool if that's the case.
I think Rachel McAdams is a bad agent.
Well, I wondered maybe she, like, maybe if you decide you're not going to do girlfriend wife roles,
mm-hmm.
thankless girlfriend wife roles, and also you don't want to play, like, FBI, hardened FBI or Iraq war negotiator, there's only so many roles left for women in, like, serious prestige movies that get
in
made
in their
by
late
Hollywood.
30s. It's true. Yeah, it's true.
And I think she projects that sort of like sort of humane competence and intelligence pretty well
yeah.
that these roles seem to call for. Like, I can't picture her doing the like some of the harder. I mean, I'm sure she could. She's very talented. But like, I think that this is kind of that sort of like there's a toughness to the lady reporter trope, but also like the compassion and the intelligence. I think she does that well. I think it's kind of a sweet spot for her.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, she has a warmth.
Oh.
Why don't we take a break for a second and come back with some trivia?
Sounds good.
You were just seeking the truth, that's all. You're a truth seeker. That's all. You can't help it. It's who you are. You're such a hypocrite. You're not interested in me. Me coming here was all about you and getting your story. I trust in you. You're my friend. You were supposed to be my friend when you were my wife. You're my friend, Cal! I never would have done this to you!
I'm sorry, Steven, okay? I'm sorry about all of it. Please, look, I've been a... And I can understand why you hate me for it. You just gotta put aside how you feel about me and stay with us. We're so close. Every single part of this, I've put myself on the line.
Welcome back to Box Office Bylines. It's the season premiere, season two premiere, and we're talking about State of Play, starring Russell Crowe, Ben Affleck, and Rachel McAdams. And Jacob, I have to imagine, with all of these characters, there's got to be some good trivia.
There is. Eva, this is, you like this movie a lot. Do you know much of the backstory on how it got made?
I don't. No, I'm not a deep diver on movies that I just sort of enjoy superficially.
Oh, wow.
We are very different
then. You're on the right show then, because you're going to learn a bunch.
Excellent.
So IMDb trivia, they noted with no other details that Russell Crowe and Rachel McAdams did not get along on set. Don't know why, but... but Russell Crowe is a famous not getting alonger.
So. He seems like, yeah, not a nice guy.
Gets along with no one except Alan Doyle.
Alan Doyle, yeah. Only.
Maybe that's it when you find a friendship like that.
Like when Tara, you're up, you can't get down. Yeah, that's right. Who's who between you and I?
I think you're Alan Doyle. You're the musician.
Yeah, but I'm also really surly.
Okay.
I do have that haircut.
This film was in production hell for a while. Brad Pitt was long associated. He was supposed to be the main role of the reporter.
Oh.
And he was actually supposed to reteam with Edward Norton from Fight Club, ugh, who would play the congressman.
Whoa.
That's such a different movie. Like, that's an Oscar movie. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, prestige-wise, it's so different.
Pitt even visited the Washington Post newsroom in 2007 and stayed for several hours talking shop with journalists. But things became so bad, he eventually nicknamed the production State of Delay.
Brad.
He left 1 week before it was set to begin filming over changes that were being made to the script. And the studio offered to do a rewrite to make Pitt happy. But that was when the writer's strike was happening.
Oh, wow.
And Brad wanted to wait until that was over, not cross the picket line, and the studio didn't, so Brad walked.
Wow. Good for Brad.
Yeah.
Brad Pitt, man of the people.
Other actors considered for the role were Johnny Depp, Nicolas Cage, and Tom Hanks.
Nicolas Cage.
Wow.
And Tom Hanks. I'm sure they're up against each other all the time.
Wow.
Who can you get on short notice, maybe?
Yeah, Cage would have been interesting in that part, honestly.
Yeah.
Tom Hanks,
different
wrong.
Energy,
but yeah, Cage would have been something else.
Cage would have done like the sort of like neurotic reporter thing, I feel like.
Yeah. He would have been really tweaky.
Yeah.
So Crowe came in sort of as a favor. He had always wanted to work with McDonald, the director. But he was also, there were some timing issues because he was shooting Robin Hood at the same time with his buddy, Alan Doyle.
Alan a Dale.
Yeah. So IMDb notes that the majority of Crowe's 3 hours per day in hair and makeup was spent hiding his extremely long hair grown for that title role.
Oh.
So he could have had even more luxurious hair.
Oh my goodness.
I was wondering, I was like, how could they have hired Russell Crowe on short notice when he had to grow out that hair? But he already had the hair. That's brilliant.
Had it there. They had to professional
ready to go.
It up. Yeah. In a scene shot at the Library of Congress, I believe that's when Affleck and Robin Wright are like holding a press
fighting?
Conference.
Yeah.
The production employed several real-world journalists amongst the extras, including Bob Woodward, Margaret Carlson, Bob Schieffer, John Palmer, Caddy Kay, and Stephen Clemens.
They kept cutting to a lady with glasses who I thought would turn out to be someone later.
So
she must have been real.
Or was that like Affleck's aide who was like, I'm proud of you for standing up for yourself?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
It does this kind of, I don't know if it's intentional, but they do that sort of thriller conspiracy thing where they cross cut.
Mm.
Two people at certain times, I think, to kind of make you think, wonder, like, oh, who's going to die or who's in on it. And there's also all those sweeping helicopter shots of Washington. Scenes featuring the media were shot in the anamorphic format on 35mm, while scenes focusing on the world of politics were shot in high-definition video with a digital video camera. Did not notice the difference.
No.
It's kind of interesting.
Yeah. All right. The producers arranged a cast trip to the Washington Post newsroom. McAdams, in an interview, later said that it was so interesting being a fly on the wall in those morning meetings. What's everybody got? What's in the pipeline? Oh, that's dead. Nobody cares about that. And the things that people really cared about hearing about. Also, it's such a politically minded newspaper, and we were there at the time of the elections. There was quite a frenzy going on. I know for sure that I could never have done that. I think I cut the end of her quote off, but yeah, I don't think she thinks she can handle it in a newsroom.
Well.
Helen Mirren shot all her scenes in 4 days. Good for her.
It seemed like it. She just appeared occasionally and always with the same people.
So fabulous, though. So fabulous.
Oh my God, amazing.
That fuck
amazing.
You very much was chef's kiss.
Although the assassin, Bingham, is shot and killed by police on the street outside the congressman's office, the text of the story that Crow types at the end says police discovered his body in his apartment as an apparent suicide.
What?
That whole scene did have the feel of a reshoot. It was like just some random outdoor area.
Mm-hmm.
It's him and the gun and the cops roll up and yeah.
So maybe it was supposed to be like Crow gets killed, but he was recording his congressman buddy, and so McAdams finds the tape and writes it or something.
Yeah. Well, hadn't he? I thought he had written most of it too. Yeah, and then she could have finished it.
Okay.
Yeah, I would love to know what the original ending is.
So it's not that Russell Crowe's story covers up a police shooting in the end. It's the
a very public, very many gunned police shooting.
None of you saw nothing.
And it would have been kind of nice if, like, so he's dead and she adds his byline to the story posthumously.
That's not what we did then. It wasn't cool for movie stars to die.
Yeah.
You didn't sign up for that.
It ruins the chance of a sequel.
Truly. State of Play 2, Pig in the City.
Midway through the movie, when a character takes the Washington Globe off a news rack, it's a tabloid. In the final scene, it's a broadsheet.
What newspaper nerd wrote that? Jacob Boone.
I didn't notice, but there you go. Maybe they have like a weekly edition.
Mm-hmm.
And we mentioned Russell Crowe having problems with people, and the night Pat Murphy died in 2008. I don't know if you guys knew this. The band Gaelic Storm released a CD with the track titled "The Night I Punched Russell Crowe," based on what they claim was a true story that happened to their lead singer, Patrick Murphy.
Yeah.
What?
It's a fun song.
Weird.
We'll play some of it, I'm sure. They won't mind. yeah, that's all.
All right.
That's quality trivia.
It usually is.
Eva, I mentioned your book, but what do you have coming up people should know about, and where can they find you?
I'm on Twitter far more often than I should be, at Eva Holland. I've got a big feature coming out in The Walrus in a few weeks. It's kind of a legal story. It might be out by the time this is coming out. It's about the Braden Bushby case in Thunder Bay and how the legal system handles missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. And I'm trying to figure out kind of what comes next after that.
Awesome. And Tara, you just finished your movie.
Mm-hmm.
And now?
That's why I sound so tired. Now I, too, have to write a book. And I'll get to it.
My condolences.
Thank you so much.
people can find Tara. You're still on Twitter. Thorny Itchy Pets.
And Booney, you're at RWJ Boone.
All right, Eva, thank you so much for joining us. This was fun.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much.
And yeah, until next week. What are we doing next week? Oh.
Heartburn.
Yeah.
In this house, we stand Nora Ephron.
yeah, tune in then next week. And until then, stay between the lines and keep shipping the news. My turn.